Hey everybody, and welcome back to Fueling Forward Friday. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former elite runner. Today's episode, I will be answering questions you all have submitted to me beforehand. And if you would like to submit any questions in the future, you can do so at my website, www.fuelingforward.com, under the podcast tab, or you can send me an email at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I just want to start by thanking everyone who has listened over the past couple of weeks and has given me feedback. I think this adventure of starting a podcast was pretty intimidating for me. I wouldn't consider myself a tech-savvy person. I wouldn't consider myself someone who I would see as like a podcast host. But like I've said multiple times, I just feel like this information and these stories need to be shared. There needs to be a place where people can go to hear these things, to learn, and just a safe space to encourage athletes to fuel well. So to have it be so well received was just so, it meant so much to me. It just really has been so meaningful and just really reaffirmed that I'm happy that I started this. And I was kind of reflecting on it this week. I feel like there is a skill set that we have as runners where we're able to kind of put ourselves out there and tolerate discomfort. And I always tell runners this, like the things that you learn in running apply to a lot of different things in life. You know, so for example, here, like getting on a start line, terrifying, right? You're putting yourself out there, you're risking, you know, having things go wrong. And that's sort of similar to how it felt starting this podcast, where, you know, with training and racing, you spend months and months and months training and doing all these things and talking about your training, and maybe you're posting it on Strava and you have people you're training with and people know what you're doing. And it's always really scary to get on a start line because I feel like there's always this sense of like, well, what if it doesn't go well? What does that mean? What are people going to think? And that's something that I personally am always trying to work on, is not caring what people are thinking, right? Or just trying to care less, I guess, is a good way to put that. And so starting this podcast felt like getting on a start line where I was putting myself out there, putting this concept out there that was really important to me and that I worked really hard on. And, you know, it's, you're putting yourself out there and opening yourself up for potential criticism and feedback, which for me, and I know a lot of runners who were all really like perfectionist, type A people, opening yourself up for criticism or receiving criticism is hard. And that's not to say that it's bad, right? Like sometimes I need criticism. Sometimes I need hard feedback to hear to make things better. But that doesn't mean that I handle it well, you know, in the moment. Like, I'm probably going to cry, but that's fine. But I mean, that's been the fun of this, is like, I was surprised how, after I got it going, how easy it's been and how exciting it's been. And every week, like Thursday nights, it feels like Christmas Eve. I'm so excited for my episode to come out on Fridays. And it's just been such a fun new challenge to incorporate. And so I say that not to like sound like I'm bragging, but I just, if you're out there and you're thinking about doing something that challenges you or that makes you uncomfortable or scares you, go for it. Just go for it. You know what? Like, I spent years thinking about doing this podcast, and every day that I didn't do it, I felt like I was failing, essentially, which I know that's kind of like the perfectionist way to think of things, but I did. I felt like I was not doing something and I was letting fear kind of win. And so doing it, even though it was scary, I feel better. Like, I feel less stressed. I feel better because I'm doing this thing that I've been wanting to do. And I think that's how races can go too. We build them up so much in our head. We build up this race. We have all these scenarios, the what ifs, like best case, worst case. And we can make ourselves exhausted before we even get to the start line, just panicking about things that could potentially go wrong. And what I was trying in the last few years of my career to remember is, like, when I'm on the start line, when the gun goes off, I'm in control of what happens. I get to decide how my race is going to go. And of course, there's times where you don't feel as good or where it's harder to do that. But at the end of the day, you are the one who did the training, you did the work, you belong there. And that's what I've had to remind myself with this podcast is like, I have the training, I have the knowledge and the skill sets, I have the schooling, and you just sometimes have to go for it. So if you're a runner and you're not sure about starting a new adventure or trying something new, just remember that all the tools and skills you need to do that are already there because you practice them every day in running and training and preparing for races. So don't be afraid to go for it. So just wanted to start the episode out by thanking you guys. Kind of went down a tangent there, but this has been so fun. And these episodes I'm also really excited about because I love hearing from you guys. And I get so many questions as a dietitian on a daily basis, whether that's at the dog park when someone hears I'm a dietitian, or people I run into, or people messaging me on Instagram. And I love hearing those questions because I hear a lot of similar questions. And I know that if somebody else has a question, there are more people out there who have that question too. So I thought this was a fun way to address a lot of questions that I get. And if you didn't know this already, I did open up a place on my website under the podcast tab where you can go and submit questions. I'll be doing these Q&As every other week. So plenty of time and opportunity to submit your questions. You can also email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com with any questions or anecdotes, things that you want to share. Something else that I thought would be fun with these episodes is having a little like topic or story that you guys can share your own experience with. And this week, something I wanted to bring up, rewinding a little bit, I don't know how many of you guys know this, but my husband Nick and I just moved to LA. So we moved out of Boulder, moved to a new place, which is always hard and fun. It's a fun adventure. But I used to coach at my old high school in Louisville, Colorado, and that's actually the head coach that coached me in high school is who I came back to coach with. So it was really special, really meaningful for me to coach there. I loved coaching with those kids. It was just something I looked forward to every day, and it just reminds me of, you know, why I like running. And I also loved getting to incorporate the nutrition piece a little bit because a lot of high school runners have questions about nutrition, of course, and same with parents. And anyway, so we moved to LA. We have started running with a group out here on Sundays, which is really fun. And one of the people in the group is a coach at a local high school. So he invited me to apply to be a volunteer coach, which I'm really excited about. But of course, to be a volunteer coach at a school, you have to go through like all these things like your CPR training and fingerprinting and all this stuff to be a coach. And one of the things is a coaching course. And I've been working on taking that, and one thing that I came across was there's a nutrition unit. And that was sort of like, I don't know how I feel about that, because on the one hand, you know, it is important for coaches to know a little bit about nutrition because they are going to get questions from athletes, and just to be aware of like what to look for, red flags for athletes they should be concerned with. But I think something that I have a problem with including the nutrition training in a coaching course is it can sort of make coaches think they're more qualified than they are to give nutrition advice or potentially overstep their boundaries as a coach and go a little bit too far with telling athletes what to do with their nutrition. And as you guys heard, if you listened to Laura's episode last week, you kind of heard that happening at a collegiate level. If you haven't listened to her episode, I highly recommend you going back and listening to that because her story is really powerful. But that is something I see a lot. And so what I wanted to kind of call out to you guys is if you've had an experience or a coach who's overstepped those boundaries, what was that like? Tell us, you know, what did they say and what did that feel like to hear your coach try to tell you what to do with nutrition? And do you have anything from a coach that stuck out in your mind for years? And I know for me personally, I had a coach once a long, long time ago tell me that I should be aiming for 500 calories at each meal. And as a dietitian, I now know that that's nowhere near enough for a lot of runners, especially for myself, a young runner, that was not enough. But even still to this day, after like 8 or 9 years of school, being a dietitian for 5 years, I'll sometimes randomly have that number come up in the back of my mind when I'm making a meal and I'm like, oh, this is over 500 calories. And then of course I check myself and I'm like, okay, doesn't matter, that's fine. But it's just interesting how much those comments can stick with you. And that's what I hear from a lot of athletes is like a coach maybe will say something well-meaning or just kind of a one-off comment, and doesn't realize how much it impacted that athlete or how much it stuck with that athlete. So that's something else I'd love to hear from you guys. I want to share some of those experiences on the next Q&A podcast in 2 weeks. Write in with your experiences of what a coach has told you that stuck with you for a long time. So now I'm going to go ahead and dive into some of the questions that you guys have submitted to me, and I'm just going to read these questions as is. So the first question that I received says, "Hey, I was wondering if you have a good high-level guidance on eating structure, meal frequency, what kind of food should be in that meal, what to eat pre-post runs, etc. I don't want to count calories or macros, but I do want to make sure I'm eating the right things without thinking too much, hence structure helps. I'm a vegetarian, so protein is sometimes a concern, especially in restaurants. Thanks." Yeah, so this question has a lot of parts to it, and I would say something you guys are going to hear me say a lot on here is it depends. It really depends on the athlete. There's never going to be a one-size-fits-all approach to nutrition, and there shouldn't be. So if you're hearing from somebody that you should always be doing something, that should be a red flag, taking nutrition advice from somebody anyway. There should never be like a black or white guidance or recommendation with nutrition. But I will say, I can give you some general guidelines of things that I've seen to be helpful and then ways that you can apply it to yourself. In terms of meal frequency, this is something that I work with a lot of athletes on because I do tend to see athletes have really big gaps in their days of fueling. And depending on what level you're at, what age you are, how much you're training, you know, I would say I tell athletes to try to eat anywhere from every 2 to 4 hours. So every 2 hours would apply more to like high school and collegiate runners who are growing and training a lot, you know, marathoners, ultra runners, pro athletes, people whose training volume is pretty high. I would say, you know, tend more towards that 2 hour range. If you are somebody whose training volume is lower, maybe you're not in the middle of a training block, you know, still no more than 4 hours would apply. And that would apply in your off season, that would apply any time of year to anybody, regardless of activity level. I don't recommend going more than 4 hours without eating. So for most athletes, that ends up being somewhere between 2 to 3 hours. 4 hours is kind of on the long end. An easy way to figure out for yourself what that should look like is working from the time you wake up and kind of going through your day. So if I'm eating breakfast at 7:30, I'm going to try to have a snack around 10:30, lunch around 1:30, another snack maybe around like 4, and then dinner at 6:30 or 7. So sometimes it's not exactly 3 hours on the dot. Sometimes it doesn't really work out that way. But I would say, you know, trying to make sure you're filling in gaps between meals with snacks. In terms of pre and post run, again, this does depend on what time of day you're training. So if you're training first thing in the morning, if you have some time to like eat something more substantial an hour or 2 hours before you train, you know, that's probably ideal. If you can have something like toast with peanut butter and honey or a bagel or something that's going to give you a good amount of easy to digest carbs before you head out the door, that would be great. I know a lot of runners don't have that luxury, especially if you're working full time. So if you're rolling out of bed and heading out the door, doing something small like fruit snacks, some pretzels, some graham crackers, just something to get you some easy carbs that won't hurt your stomach, that will give you quick energy. Post-run, again, this depends on what time of day you're training, but if you're having, you know, a morning session and then you have to kind of rush to work, either having a drinkable option post-run, so like a smoothie that has carbs and protein both, that you can kind of drink maybe on your drive to the office, and then you could have a more substantial meal when you get there if you can pack a meal. If you're able to make a meal at home before you leave, you know, that's even better. Something again with carbs, protein, and some color in there. But it would just depend on the time of day you're training. If you have an afternoon or evening session, you know, again, what I do with a lot of my student athletes who have afternoon practices, have something like a chocolate milk or, you know, recovery drink with carbs and protein within 30 minutes of finishing your run, and then try to have dinner within 1 to 2 hours of finishing your run. Just gives you a little bit of a cushion, especially if you commute to a practice or you have to drive home or you're stretching or you have weight training or something like that. You know, trying to get something in between. With those afternoon practices for pre-run, usually I would taper off how much you're eating leading up to that run. So let's say you're running at 2 o'clock. I would start your day with a pretty substantial breakfast, say around 7. You could have a mid-morning snack around 10. And then maybe you have your lunch at like noon. So you're having a little bit more earlier in the day and then tapering off the closer you get to practice. If you're having an earlier lunch, like an 11 o'clock lunch, and you're running later, you would definitely need to have a snack in between. So again, something simple like a Clif Bar or graham crackers with peanut butter or something like that in between those two things. So it really depends on your schedule, but just generally trying to figure out, when am I running? When am I waking up? And filling in the gaps between those things with trying to eat every 2 to 4 hours, again, depending on your goal and your training level and all that kind of stuff. For tracking, this is kind of a separate question, but I would say I don't recommend tracking. Tracking can be a slippery slope. It's pretty exhausting to track calories, you know, especially if you're also tracking macros. It's just a lot of work to log those things. And I think it's important to know that the software that you're using to track can be super inaccurate. So like MyFitnessPal, for example, anyone can enter food into that database and it might be the most popular, you know, option. And so then if you select it, doesn't mean that it's accurate. It wasn't necessarily analyzed. It wasn't entered by a scientist. It could have been entered by, you know, your next door neighbor who was reading the label on the cracker box incorrectly. So there's no way to know that what you're looking at on the tracking app is actually accurate. And a lot of times the measurements they give you, so like the ranges they give you to aim for, they're very wide range based on, you know, some general equations that don't usually take into account your activity level. Well, it does take into account activity level, but not necessarily training volume, I would say. That's something that varies a lot from person to person. You know, if you're injured, how much you're burning at rest is higher than if you're not injured. When you're in the middle of a training block, how much you're burning at rest is higher than when you're not in the middle of a training block, which affects how much you need at baseline, which then affects the top end of the range. So the ranges that they give you can be pretty inaccurate. And if you're also trying to incorporate how many calories you're burning based on what like your Fitbit or your Whoop or Oura Ring or watch are telling you, that can be really inaccurate. We see a lot of those calorie trackers, they can be off by 800 plus calories a day, which is a lot. And the problem that I have with athletes tracking, not only is it a lot of work, but it also forces you to go against your intuition. So let's say you hit your quote unquote calorie count for the day, but you're still hungry. That means your body needs more. It means that you need to eat. But if you're trying not to eat because you've hit this arbitrary calorie number, well then, you know, you're gonna be under fueling and you're gonna be hungry at night. You're not gonna sleep as well. Then you're gonna have trouble with your energy, maybe with trouble sleeping and recovering. And it affects your performance and day-to-day quality of life a lot, especially the longer you're doing it. So I don't recommend tracking. Macros, I think, I don't recommend tracking macros, but I think it can be a helpful anchor for learning how much you need to be eating at a meal. So for example, like sometimes an athlete of mine will use protein. We'll say, let's try to have, you know, 20 to 30 grams of protein at each meal and 10 to 15 grams of protein at each snack. That can help them figure out, okay, how can I build my plate around protein? I will say, with protein especially, I see runners overshoot protein more often than not. I would say some runners struggle to get enough protein, but a lot of people, especially runners, are getting too much protein these days. There's like this trend right now that protein is like the most important thing in the entire world. And yes, we need protein, but for runners especially, we really need carbs. And if you're focusing too much on protein, that tends to mean that carbs go down. So if you are wanting to track macros, I think the way that I would have an athlete do this is just to take a look at how many grams of carbs they're eating for 3 to 5 days. It should not be a long-term tool, but it can be a good check-in. So let's say you track your carbs for 3 to 5 days. Most of the time, I would say 99.9% of the time, it's too low. So then it helps you see, okay, this is what my normal meal looks like, and I was off on my amount of carbs that I need, which means I need to increase my portion size of carbs. And that usually helps athletes figure out how to balance their plates better or eat more. So usually if I'm implementing any type of tracking, it's not every macro, every calorie, and it's not indefinitely or permanently. And it's also not a tool that we use to decide if you've had enough. It's a tool to see if you're getting close to where we need to be with those targets, but it's not a hard and fast rule for every day you need X amount, because it's gonna shift. It's gonna change on a day-to-day basis. How much you need is gonna change. And so if we're always aiming for the same number, some days we're overdoing it, some days we're underdoing it, and it's just not gonna be as helpful. So I encourage athletes to go more by feel. If you are hungry, eat something. Your body is not trying to trick you into eating more than you need. If it's telling you that it's hungry, it is. You know, it's a neutral thing. It doesn't have thought behind the signals that it's sending you. It's a biological feedback that's coming from a lack of something. So feeling hungry means your body needs food. A couple of things to keep in mind with that is if you're feeling hungry, you know, really soon after eating, like within an hour of eating, usually that tells me either your meal wasn't big enough or it wasn't balanced enough. So we either didn't eat enough in one sitting, or we didn't have enough carbs or protein or fat or fiber to keep us feeling full, or we had too much fiber and not enough other things. And so once we digest the fiber, move it from our stomach, we feel hungry again. Especially if we're noticing a lot of like sugar cravings and things like that, that can mean we didn't get enough carbs. So there are ways that we can tune into our body and learn a lot. And I would say those are going to be more helpful than trying to track numbers. I know it can be hard to tune into your body if you've been used to ignoring it. This is something that can be really challenging with athletes who've, you know, been under fueling or restricting. We see a lack of appetite, and that's your body just suppresses appetite hormones. That's part of a feedback loop that actually also affects your menstrual cycle. So athletes who don't have a period often have low levels of an appetite hormone called ghrelin, and so it's pretty common not to feel hungry. We also notice that athletes who have higher cortisol levels experience less hunger. Overtraining, underfueling suppresses hunger. And then we also will see athletes who, like, for example, after a long run, don't feel hungry. We call that more like acute lack of appetite, which that's pretty common. So we can't always go exclusively by appetite, and that is where that fueling schedule can be really helpful. So trying to eat every 2 to 4 hours, regardless of, like, let's say you get to the end of the 4 hours and you're still not hungry, that would tell me that you might have some appetite suppression going on, and it's going to be a good idea to try to eat something anyway. And it can take some time for your body to get into a new rhythm if you're kind of pushing through those phases of not feeling hungry. But it is something that I encourage athletes to do, and it usually takes a couple weeks. But typically, if you can stick to a consistent schedule for about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll notice that your hunger is coming back and you're actually feeling hungrier when it's time to eat, which then makes it easier to stay on top of it. The last thing on there, you know, vegetarian, so protein can be a concern. If you're a vegetarian that can eat eggs and dairy, that's a really great resource. It's pretty easy to hit your protein needs in a day if you can incorporate those things. Otherwise, soy-based products like tofu, tempeh, soy milk, or soy yogurts, those are really great options. Those are going to have the next best option in terms of protein content compared to dairy products. Oat milk, almond milk, those do not have protein. So they're not a one-to-one replacement for dairy milk. That's just something I would emphasize. Soy products are going to be the next best. I know there can be some concern out there about soy, but I would say generally soy is a very safe product to consume that has a really great amount of protein in there, really great tool for plant-based athletes. So lots of different parts to that question, but thank you for submitting that one. That was a great one. My next question is, any recommendations for a DIY electrolyte beverage, hoping to find something less expensive than store-bought? Thanks. Yeah, I love making my own homemade version of electrolytes. I love like the pre-made ones too. My personal favorite electrolyte products are like the Noon tablets or Element. That's probably one of my favorites. It's a higher sodium one. But those get expensive, especially if you're trying to have electrolytes every day or multiple times a day. So a quarter teaspoon of salt is about the same as a little over a Noon tablet. So I'll do a quarter teaspoon of salt. I'll do some lemon just for flavor. and then some honey. So the sugar in the honey and sugar in any electrolyte product actually helps us absorb those electrolytes. We have something called a sodium glucose transporter. So we need both things to move the other. So if we just do the sodium, we don't move it as well as if we add some sugar or some glucose with it. That's why sports drinks have sugar in them. Gives us some fuel and actually helps us absorb that hydration. So I add a little bit of honey, salt, and lemon. That's just kind of to taste. That's my alternative to a noon tablet. If you need something that's, you know, a little more mineral rich, so something like potassium, I work with a lot of athletes and trying to increase potassium intake. What you can do is use coconut water instead of plain water. So coconut water is great for potassium content. It does not have sodium, so it's not a great electrolyte replacement drink by itself. But if you add some salt, some, you know, lemon, honey, coconut water, that's a pretty mineral-rich beverage that would be a great alternative to a store-bought electrolyte drink. Okay, I'm going to try to get through maybe two more questions here. I want to keep these episodes a little bit shorter. All right, so the next question I have, help, I have a crazy schedule. I work full-time, am finishing up grad school on the side, and am a marathon runner. I'm also interviewing for a job that would require weekly air travel. I struggle to get enough food in with my training and schedule, and also can't have gluten or dairy. Do you have any ideas for ways to get more calories in? Love your content and can't wait for the podcast. Thank you. All right, so I would say I sort of talked a little bit about the schedule piece earlier, but having this crazy busy schedule is something that I run into with pretty much every athlete that I'm working with. Everyone is either working or they're a student, and they're also training a fair amount on top of that. My biggest piece of advice is planning ahead. So let's say on Saturday and Sunday you have some time to get ready for the week. Take advantage of it. I know that it can be hard, especially when you're so busy. Usually the last thing you want to be doing at the end of a busy week is getting ready for another one. But just reminding yourself that, especially if you're in the middle of like grad school or something like that, it is temporary and it will get better. You'll have seasons of life that are busier than others. And planning ahead and preparing in those moments will really help you be more consistent with your fueling, which will help you continue to train and feel good showing up for work and school. So, I mean, it all does help, but I know it can be really difficult. The best way to tackle that is to plan out probably 3 or 4 ideas for meals and snacks for the week. So usually what I'll do is I'll come up with like 2 breakfast ideas that I can make ahead of time and then freeze. Some of the things that I'll do would be like breakfast sandwiches or the egg omelet muffin cups or like a oatmeal bake that I can freeze and then heat up in the microwave. Overnight oats are also great because you can make those ahead of time and just grab and go during the week. So something like that where you have something prepared ahead of time, you can spend a little time on the weekend making some of those items. And then, you know, snacks, I try to think ahead for how many snacks am I going to be having in a day? And this sort of goes back to that schedule, you know, how many times during the day do I have an opportunity to eat a snack? So figuring out, okay, let's say I need to have 2 snacks during the day when I'm gone. And then I'll come up with a few options that I can rotate between. So grab and go things, I really like trail mix. Those like Chomps meat sticks are really great for protein. Yogurts or drinkable yogurts from Chobani or Siggy's, those are really great for on the go. You know, just trying to think of a carb and a protein option that pair together really well. Lunches, you know, same idea, coming up with a couple things that you can have on hand for lunches that you can either pack ahead of time or prepare ahead of time and bring with you. And then for dinners and meals like that, if you're not at work, I think about which days of the week do I have the least busy schedule or when does it make the most sense for me to cook? You know, if I have a day where I'm working from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. and I'm training in there, probably not a good day for me to cook. But if I have a day where it's a little less busy, I'm home a little bit earlier, or I have an easy run, it's way easier for me to cook on those days. So I'll pick, you know, 3 days a week that I can cook, and I'll make either a double batch of a recipe or just make enough so that I have leftovers to heat up on those days that I'm not going to have time to cook. So it takes some planning and some thinking ahead a little bit. And I'm actually trying to put together some resources to help you guys figure that out on your own as well. But that's kind of where I would start, planning ahead, you know, going to the grocery store, using your ideas for meals and snacks to build your grocery list, thinking about quantity. If you're going to eat an apple every day, you need 7 apples. Don't just buy 5 and then be out by the end of the week, which is what a lot of people run into. So doing some planning ahead is definitely what I would recommend. The gluten and dairy alternative piece. So dairy, like I said earlier, a good alternative is a soy product. That would be the next best thing in terms of getting those nutrients in that dairy would provide. For gluten options, I would try to choose things that are more naturally gluten-free. So things like rice, potatoes, oats, quinoa. Some of those take a little more prep work. You know, you can always buy gluten-free versions of English muffins, bagels, breads, and things like that. You know, corn tortillas are also gluten-free. But I try to, you know, think about those kinds of options instead of trying to lean more heavily on some of the, like, no-carb options. Those tend to be a little harder on your stomach, a little more fiber. Those can have more, cause more GI issues down the road. So, like, the chickpea pastas aren't usually something I recommend for busy runners, just because those are going to be more likely to cause GI issues. Instead, I would have them do something like white rice. So just trying to think about things that are naturally gluten-free, you know, like the oats that I mentioned earlier, overnight oats or baked oats. Those are a great gluten-free option for breakfast. Snacks, honestly, gluten-free pretzels, in my opinion, sometimes are even better than regular pretzels. You could do a banana or like the energy oat bites. Trail mixes are usually gluten-free. So those things tend to be pretty easy to grab and go as well. And then, you know, dinners, again, that's where I would incorporate, like, the rice, the potatoes, some of those naturally gluten-free grains that you would find. Okay, the last question that I'm going to answer for today is thoughts on collagen and when to take it. Before a run, after a run, every day to see the most benefit, etc. I love this question because collagen had its moment in the limelight there for a while. I feel like collagen was the thing that everyone thought they needed to take. There were collagen creamers, there was collagen gummies, there was, you know, all this stuff with collagen. So collagen is a type of protein that is the most common, most abundant protein in our body, in our tissue. So it's in tendons and ligaments and bones and muscle. That said, consuming collagen does not always equal building collagen in our body. It's, again, not that like one-to-one thing. And what I find with a lot of athletes who are consuming collagen, especially if they're saying things like, oh, I'm noticing better hair, better skin, better nails, that's actually because of getting more protein. Research has shown that collagen does not improve hair, skin, or nail health. There's no evidence to support that that happens. But when it does happen, it's usually because our overall protein intake is low. And our hair, our skin, our nails, the health of those tissues requires adequate protein intake. And so especially for runners and really active people who need a lot of protein, we see some of those tissues take a hit because we're trying to use protein for other things. So getting collagen as a supplement for those people, if it's improving hair, skin, and nails, is usually just helping because we no longer have a protein deficiency going on. So in those situations, if we're just using it to get, you know, collagen or protein in, it's not something I recommend to all athletes because it's not the best source of protein. It's not what's called a complete protein, so it doesn't have all the essential amino acids that we need. It is lacking some. And I would rather have an athlete use something like a whey protein isolate to get more complete protein in if we're going to be using a protein powder than I would to have an athlete use collagen. That said, collagen can serve a purpose. So there is some evidence that it can help heal gut tissue. So in an athlete who's dealing with some chronic GI issues, you know, on top of working on other things, sometimes adding in collagen can help with some of that gut healing if we're dealing with some, you know, chronic gut problems. Another thing collagen can do is help speed up recovery from a tendon or ligament issue when it's used properly. So let's say, you know, we have an athlete who's coming back from an ACL repair or an Achilles injury. That's a really common one for collagen use. What we would do in that situation is have an athlete take at minimum 15 grams of collagen paired with something that has vitamin C. So it can't just be put in coffee by itself. Coffee alone decreases absorption of pretty much every nutrient. We would need to take it with something that has vitamin C. So I actually have my athletes put collagen in like orange juice or make a smoothie with vitamin C rich fruits like strawberries and drink that. And you want to ingest that about 30 to 60 minutes before you do your rehab exercises. So the idea here is that when we do our rehab exercises, we're increasing blood flow to that damaged tissue, paired with increasing the building blocks of that tissue, which is the collagen and the vitamin C. Both those things together is what helps generate new tissue. So if we drink that collagen smoothie 30 to 60 minutes before we do our Achilles rehab and are consistent with that, that's when we can see injuries recover faster compared to an athlete who is not using collagen. That said, do you need it? Is it essential? No, it's not. You can definitely get enough protein from naturally occurring sources in food. Collagen is also naturally occurring in things like bone broth, so you could also just have more bone broth rich meals, you know, use it to cook your rice, make soup with bone broth. Those are some other ways to naturally get collagen. But if you are a plant-based athlete or you don't consume animal products, unfortunately, there is no option for collagen. There is fish-based collagen, but again, if you are fully vegan, there is no collagen option out there for you, unfortunately. All right, those are the questions that I got through today. In the future, again, please feel free to submit questions to me. You can go to my website, which is www.fuelingforward.com. Go to the podcast tab to submit a question. You can also email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com and submit any of your questions. And don't forget to submit your stories about things coaches have told you about nutrition that have stuck with you. Thank you guys again for listening. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please remember to subscribe, rate and review, and share with any friends who you think might also enjoy these podcasts. I'm so appreciative for everyone for their feedback and enthusiasm around this podcast. It's been so fun for me to bring this to life. And I'm looking forward to next week's episode where we will be talking to Corey McGee, who is an incredible runner and athlete. Thank you guys again, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.